Hi everyone, I'm facing the other way. So for those of you actually watching the video, not listening to the podcast, I decided to rotate my camera and show you where I normally work, which is with all of these screens. So I've got four 1080p screens, which I sort of run across here. In fact, they're more than 1080. They're the 1920 by 1280 from memory. Now, I've had these for ages, and I originally had a couple, and then I thought that was good, but what's better than two? Three. So I went and grabbed another one off eBay, and then, of course, what's even better than three? Well, I've got four of the suckers. This works great, and I love being able to just lay everything out like this. So whenever I'm actually sort of sitting down trying to do things that require a lot of piecing together of parts, so for example, on one of these screens there's a course in progress I'll talk about in a moment, this works really well. So I tend to go between this and then going downstairs and changing environment and going to a laptop or going to a cafe and taking a portable machine. So anyway, it's not particularly important. I just thought I'd put something else in the background other than the usual stuff. Now, speaking of courses, I mentioned that there is one in progress there. I am writing about this stuff. I've got boxes and boxes here to show you. And for those of you that are listening, not looking, I'm doing a course on Ubiquiti Unify Wi-Fi gear. Not just Wi-Fi gear, some network gear too. And you might have seen, I've written about Ubiquiti in the past. I'll put some links in there. And basically, everything in my house, I made Ubiquiti back in, that was late last year, October, November, something like that. The stuff just rocked, so I wrote about it. And a lot of people read that and decided to get themselves some Ubiquiti things. And I keep getting tweets from people saying, hey, thank you for the Ubiquiti stuff. Now I need to explain to my significant other why we've just got all this new networking gear at home. So I did all that. And what I actually did in the way I built this up, I'm going to put some boxes here and show you everything, is I put in a bunch of these, which are wireless access points. And these are sort of neat looking disc units, for want of a better term, which effectively you put enough of these around your house to cover the area that you need. So rather than just having like one in one central place, you end up with, in my case, I put five of these, which is massive overkill. In many houses, you'd have like one or two. So anyway, in the course that I'm writing, I'm actually going to install this in a restaurant run by a friend of mine, because very often these are used for commercial, sort of anything from coffee shops through to massive stadium use cases. You can also use them at home. You just obviously don't build out as much infrastructure as you would in a massive stadium. So anyway, I'm doing this course. I'm putting these guys in. Now these will then connect through to, let me see, through to a switch. So there'll be an 8-port switch which goes in there, which is this one just here. So this is a PoE switch, so it will actually deliver power over Ethernet as well, which means that that big access point just there, it's not really that big. It's kind of like a probably halfway between like a dessert plate and a dinner plate in size. That'll connect into this, it won't need any more power. So that'll be cool. The other thing that will happen then is that that will connect into the Unified Security Gateway, also known as USG, which is going to give us all the firewall bits and the DHCP bits and all the bits that you need between your own internal network and the public internet. So that'll go in there. That'll be good. To manage it, because you have a different device which actually does your user interface bits, so all of the portal that you normally have in your browser, is one of these guys. This is the cloud key. And this is like just a really big USB dongle. So, except it's not USB, it is plugged in over Ethernet. And this will sort of manage the whole unit. And then just to show a couple of other things to try and demonstrate the way you can sort of build up your network from different components, there will be one of these AC mesh units. Now this mesh unit, once we set this up, what it will do is it will wirelessly uplink to the access point. So what we'll do is in this particular restaurant, it's spread out over a bit of space, we'll sort of put that at one distant end of the restaurant so that they can get Wi-Fi down there, and it will uplink back to that disk-like access point. And then we've also got a little in-wall unit. Now these are really cool. In fact, I'll take this one out of the box just to show you. I wrote another blog post where I put these in my brother's house. So what was happening, my brother bought a house which he and his wife renovated. and they wanted to get network done right. And I was like, well, I know just what you need. So I put all of these in his house. And what you'll actually see, if you look at the back, there's an Ethernet plug on the back, an Ethernet input. And then on the bottom, there's a couple of Ethernet jacks. So what you're effectively doing here is, rather than saying, hey, let's just put a faceplate in walls, which is just going to run Ethernet back to a switch somewhere, what we'll do is we'll put in this, which also has a wireless access point and the jacks. So this is really cool. So you can sort of mount this on a wall somewhere, and it looks really slick. It's a nice sort of modern faceplate. You can put this on a wall somewhere, get Wi-Fi, and also plug devices into it, like physically plug devices into it. So I am actually really looking forward to doing this course. And per the images in the screen behind me, I'm a good whack into it. I've got to talk to the Ubiquity people on someday next week. It's in my diary. This is one that they're paying me to create. It is a commercial course insofar as this is one of the things I do to make a living. They will put it out for free though, which is cool. So anyone who's interested in what these products are will be able to go and watch it without paying any money. So they're going to have a look at that. I'll go and install it in my mate's restaurant. I think it's Thursday next week. And then record it, edit it, pump it out. So hopefully it'll all be sitting with them in a couple of weeks from now. And we should have this out live to you sometime in August. Now, I'm not going to drill into it, but for those who are looking at this and going, I really like the idea of not having a crappy network, but I don't need all of that stuff, they also sent me one of these. And this is like their consumer line. So this is Amplify. And I'll take this one out of the box too, because it looks pretty neat. So the idea of Amplify is that you just plug this in. By the way, have you ever seen home networking gear packaged so nicely? Look at this, it actually, how does that come out? This is almost like Apple level packaging. So what it actually does is there's a base unit just here. That's got a few jacks on the back. That will uplink into your modem or whatever else. Obviously, it's got another 4 Ethernet adapters in here, USB Type-C power by the look of it, and then a couple of these remote access points, which will wirelessly uplink to the base station, and then you put these in different points around your house, and they literally just plug in. These are American plugs, so it's going to be fun making them work here, but I'll put an adapter on those guys, and they should be fine. And I think I might actually go and put this in my parents' house, because I spent a lot of time there and I don't like having crap Wi-Fi there either. Plus, I think if I put any more access points in my house just here, the whole thing's going to start to glow. So anyway, that's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm doing this whole Ubiquity course, particularly on that Unify product suite, and you will see much more about that soon. It's good fun because I get to play with the tech. Plus, I think people will really enjoy the result of it. All right, so that's that. Let me jump into stuff. In terms of things that I have done this week. And I want to start with something which is another one of these kind of there was a minor incident sort of things. And if you have a look at my Twitter timeline, you'll see that there's probably, I don't know, I call it 85% security stuff. And then there might be 5% me sitting in the sun somewhere. And there might be like 5% me drinking beer. And then the remaining 5% will be just other random general things, which may not be specifically related to security. But, you know, like it turns out I do other things in my life. I know, crazy. And one of the things I did during this week is I put out a tweet that was related to Trump. Now, first of all, there is a lot of material, right? Like, let's just be honest. There is a huge amount of material, regardless of your political leanings. The guy does create news headlines like nothing else. Now, this was after a series of his tweets, and I was sitting here doing my work late at night, and I've seen something pop up on CNN, and it's one of those things that pops up, and you just go, this is surely bullshit. Like, this is just too weird. And it was the thing where he said, we're going to ban transgender people from the military. And I took a screen cap of several of the tweets, and I said something along the lines of, it's so weird that you just never even know when the news is actually real or not, which is ironic because he's the only one who says the fake news thing, but then you see him say something and you go, well, I really hope that's actually fake. Turns out it wasn't fake. Anyway, so that was that. And look, I mean, heaps of people came back and went, my screen's gone. Heaps of people came back and went, look, you know, that this is ridiculous, crazy Trumpism stuff, as per usual. One bloke the next day, which was yesterday for me, replied and said something along the lines of, please keep your Twitter timeline focused on security and not politics. And I want to address that not just to sort of take a shot at this bloke, because he's certainly not the first one to have made comments about what should be on my Twitter timeline. And I'm certainly not the first one to have had feedback like this. I've seen Scott Hanselman, who many of you will know, has often been at the receiving end of this. And in my defense, he does tweet a lot more Trump stuff than what I do. But regardless, the thing about an online profile like this, and indeed why I even do videos like this, is to try and show that you have a little bit of personality. You know, you're not some machine who just pumps out boring, inane, same old stuff day in, day out. And inevitably, there will be things in there that not everyone agrees with. I've mentioned before in these weekly updates, I did a talk in Norway recently called Hack Your Career. And one of the things I talk about in there, I'll link to that as well, actually. One of the things I talk about is that you will often get feedback from people that aren't happy with what you're doing. And I actually show a tweet where someone was unhappy in that I had put a short audio clip of the new car I got, because the exhaust sounds epic to my ears anyway. And they'd said something along the lines of, can you please just keep it to security? And the point that I make in this talk is that Twitter and social media and all these sorts of things are very much an opportunity to show your character, all right, to show who you are. Now, as an extension of that, I could have, I think, quite rightly gone back and said, no, like, you're being an idiot, you know, like, it's not your timeline, you do what you want with your timeline. I could have been very brash, and instead, what actually happened in this case is that the guy later apologized and said, you know, look, it was, I don't think he necessarily said out of line, but basically obviously reacted too strongly. And also within that talk, I've said, you're not going to please everyone, and frankly, if you are pleasing everyone all the time, you're probably doing it wrong. And what I mean by that is that if you sort of dumb it down to try and keep everybody happy all the time, you will erode and dilute so much of your character that, yeah, frankly, you got to kind of ask what you're in it for. And I would much rather have probably 99% of people happy 99% of the time, and have that sort of that little gap there where there's going to be people who don't like what you do. I'd much rather have that than sort of get to that point where it just gets diluted and boring. So, you know, I think that's an important thing. But above all, like, this is my profile. That's why it's got my name on the Twitter account. You know, like, you take your profile and you don't talk about politics. That's fine. But to go out and tell other people what they should and should not put in their timeline when it's something like that, I think is a little bit nuts. And occasionally, I'm still going to tweet about Trump and beer and cars and sunny weather. So that is that. Now, I want to jump onto some other stuff, and I'm just looking at what I have here on the iPad. I killed AMP. Now, for those of you who don't know what AMP is sort of a good idea, which I think was ultimately poorly executed. So AMP is Accelerated Mobile Pages. And the idea of AMP is that there are a bunch of people on mobile devices, like the one I'm talking to at the moment over there. I record all this on my iPhone 7 Plus. And you're out there on mobile and you load a web page and you're loading so much junk over your 3G, 4G connection, and it's a small device and all this sort of stuff. And there's a whole bunch of sort of messy things that happen that are unnecessary in mobile. And AMP was like, let's strip all that stuff out. We'll dumb it down. We'll take out the JavaScript. We'll cache a lot of it on Google. So this is a Google thing as well, which is probably worth noting. And then we'll cache a lot of it, and people will get very fast pages without all the guff that goes with it. And initially, I was like, wow, this is actually pretty epically cool, insofar as it executes and loads blisteringly fast, which is good. Over recent weeks, I've increasingly become disillusioned with AMP. And the reason I've become disillusioned is I continually had people say, hey, something on your site isn't working. For example, I would deep link to a comment where there'd be a particular comment, good, bad, or otherwise, and I'd want to point people to it. But because AMP doesn't load the JavaScript, it then doesn't load the discuss, comments weren't appearing. I embed a lot of tweets in my posts because people make tweets that I think add to the narrative of what I'm talking about. The tweets are embedded using JavaScript. Now, you still have block quotes of the original tweet text, but if you embed media, such as images, and a lot of time I'm embedding tweets with images, then they don't show up. And I was just sort of getting to the point where I'm going, the stuff that breaks, plus the fact that this website just here on the screen is very, very well optimized in terms of how efficient the page is. Go and do a speed test on it. It's still very, very quick. It's a very light website. I eventually went, look, this is just painful. And last night I killed it. I turned it off. And I had a lot of people say thank you. like AMP, for all sorts of other reasons, is probably not a good execution of what is otherwise a good objective. So there are a couple little nuances with this. I still had people linking through to AMP URLs. So I have URLs on the site that are like /AMP at the end. So I dropped in a Cloudflare page rule to redirect those. I may even write something about that because a lot of people saying basically they've had all of these dramas because they turn off AMP and now they've got 404s everywhere. But the Cloudflare page rule, once I actually put it in the right order with the other page rules, was dead simple. So I'd strongly recommend that. All right, now let's move on because I want to get to the big thing. And this is, I've got to check my stats, but it is one of my most read blog posts in a very, very long time. And I'm sort of looking down at the iPad here, so I make sure I sort of hit the important points. But this is about passwords evolved, authentication guidance for the modern era. And this is something that I've had in mind for quite some time. I think that the real catalyst came probably about 6 weeks ago when NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology in the US, came out with a bunch of password guidance. And what they came out with echoed particularly what we've heard from the NCSC in the UK, the National Cybersecurity Centre. And it also reconciled with what we've heard from tech companies like Microsoft, among many others, which is effectively to say there are a bunch of things that we have historically been doing with passwords and authentication, which we should now be doing the opposite of. And I want to give you some examples of that, either the opposite or doing things quite differently. So, yes, a few good examples in here. One of the things that NIST says, now, this is, we've known for a long time we should be doing this, but one of the things they say is that you shouldn't be arbitrarily limiting the length of the password. Now, this is really common sense, right? Like, we shouldn't limit passwords to, say, 10 characters because it significantly decreases the strength of the password you can create. Also breaks password managers, screws stuff up like that. So NIST says 64 characters. You should allow at least 64 characters. Very coincidental they came up with that as the perfect number, but be that as it may, the point is it should be long. And it does have to be something. You have to have a limit. You can't just go unlimited because then you have like massive passwords, which might be megabytes, which might exceed max request length, cause other problems. And I've sort of said here, look, you know, if you make it 100 characters, 200 characters, or do the NIST thing, make it 256 characters, like that is awesome. That's not going to cause you dramas, and no one in their right mind is going to pop up and say, I went to register on this site, and they limited my password to 100 characters, therefore their security is shit. Not going to happen. And if it does, they're one of the people in the earlier category I spoke about which just want to whinge, and you can safely ignore them. So, there's that. Now, special characters. So here's where things get kind of interesting. So, NIST and everyone else says you should allow any character. And the number of times we see websites that say, I'm sorry, you can't use an angle bracket or an apostrophe or anything that isn't one of these allowable subsets of the entire character range. Number of times we see that is amazing. And part of the reason I wrote this blog post is that I would love for this to become the thing that people direct companies getting passwords wrong to read. And I wanted to direct them to here because it goes, look, here is like the official government guidance and the Microsoft guidance about how to do this right. So clearly not banning special characters, because really aren't all characters special. So clearly that is important. The other thing, and this is sort of the cool thing that flies in the face of traditional consensus, is that, and I want to try and get exactly the right words here. NIST says, verifiers should not impose other composition rules, i.e. mixtures of different character types or prohibiting consecutively repeated characters for memorized secrets. And, you know, really the point here is they're saying, we used to have this premise of you must have complexity, all right? So you must have uppercase, lowercase, non-alphanumeric, and that was probably usually most of it. Oh, and a number. So what people would end up doing is they would have password one, capital P, and then they'd have like an at symbol for the A, and then they'd have maybe an exclamation at the end. And the interesting thing here is Microsoft actually says, most people use similar patterns, i.e. capital letter in the first position, a symbol in the last, and a number in the last two. Cyber criminals know this, so they run their dictionary attacks using common substitutes for such as a dollar sign for an S, which incidentally is how many people spell Microsoft when they complain to me about things, an at for an A, an I for an L, or a one for an L, and so on. And we know this, right? Like, we know there is this character substitution thing. Bad guys know there is this character substitution thing as well. And what this expectation of composition means is that when someone comes along and they come up with a genuinely good pass phrase, which may just be lower cases, may have spaces, and that's it, the website then goes, nah, no good. So you go and create a password like password with an at, and suddenly it's okay. Now, also, all of this is about a broader composition of how do we apply different security controls to accounts. This is not like, hey, just allow anything you want and don't ban anything and then you're okay. There are other things that contribute to this as well, and I'll get to these as we go along. Password hints definitely are. I don't think we need to even have the discussion as to why password hints are a bad idea. If you're not sure, go and check the blog post, but password hints are a bad idea. Password managers. Now, this is something that drives me nuts, and I'm sure most people listening or watching have also been bugged by this, which is you go to a website and it either consciously breaks the password manager by doing something like disabling paste, and some password managers, for various reasons, you may need to paste into, or they break it by, so when we say disable paste, they may have events on the actual control itself. They may also look to see whether there have been individual keystroke presses, just like nasty stuff designed to stop password managers from working. And I see all the time, because people tweet me into these discussions, I see all the time companies going, yeah, you can't use password managers because security. And what they're really trying to say here is that you can't store your passwords in some other system. So NIST and NCSC and anyone with half a brain is very, very much against blocking password managers, blocking paste. So that is well and truly on the outer. Now, here's another one which I think will really resonate with people based on the feedback it has. I've had about 150 comments or something on this blog post in a day and a half too. This one will really resonate with people, and it's about not mandating regular password changes. So if you're working in an office and you're set up there in Active Directory, for example, you almost certainly get that 90-day email thing, which is, hey, your password's getting stale, you need to update it. So what you do is you go to the password that you've been using already, and then you increase the number that you have on the end of it by one. And now you have the same password, which is one of the rare passwords that you actually need to be able to remember to be able to type in, because that's how you authenticate to the machine in the first place. And all you're doing is you're just persisting this pattern over time. And this happens in an enormously prevalent way. I've certainly done it before. You have almost certainly done it, because this is what we as humans do. We try and circumvent security that poses an impediment. And regularly changing passwords is an impediment. And the point that NIST, NCSC, other big names are making here is that forcing these changes causes bad social or bad human behavior in terms of how passwords are created and maintained. For example, I keep forgetting it because I have to change it, therefore I have a post-it note and I stick it right there on the screen so that I don't forget it. That is bad for obvious reasons. So this is one of the ones that really is going to grate on a lot of organizations. And look, it's going to take a long time for these sort of changes to come through, not least of which because there are regulatory bodies out there which require, say, the rotation of password. And what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to wait for quite some time for them to actually catch up with the guidance. And that may mean that we have to keep building systems that require complexity and require rotation. And as we do that, we have to sort of keep beating the drum and saying, okay, but you're aware that this is old advice, which is really actually worse for us than not forcing composition rules or rotating. But if you are going out there and building a system from the ground up today and you don't have those regulatory obligations, well, you can actually start to use some of these good practices. So there's that one. Now, moving on, I've said here notifying users of abnormal behavior. Now, many of you would have seen this before where you sign into a site from a new device or from a country that you're not normally signing in from, and you get an email. It says, hey, just so you know, like you just signed into this thing. It's a bit unusual. We've allowed the sign-in because the credentials were correct. Maybe even the second factor of auth or the second step of the verification process was also correct. But just so you know. And that then gives you the ability to at least take some decisive action, hopefully pretty quickly after the event. So, you know, that is one of these things which is tangential to the process of actually authenticating. It's one of those things you can add to your system now, including the ability, and I give some examples here with the likes of Dropbox, including the ability to go into the web interface, look at previous security events and go, hey, that login looks a bit dodgy. I want to log that person out. Let's de-auth them. And obviously you do this in combination with a password change if you're worried that someone had your creds. So that's kind of a neat one too. And it sort of talks to the whole thing of security is a composition of controls. And this is not the one thing you do. It is one of many things that you do. Now, here's one that is particularly interesting, given the circles that I travel in. Block previously breached passwords. And this is kind of curious because what NIST has actually said here is they've said, when processing requests to establish and change memorized secrets, verifiers, so this is websites verifying passwords, verifiers shall compare the prospective secrets against a list that contains values known to be commonly used, expected, or compromised. So, commonly used. You shouldn't allow someone to have a password, no matter what symbols they use in it. Expected, for example, the name of the website. When I wrote about Cloud Pets, I showed how there are many people in Cloud Pets who had the password Cloud Pets. And even though they use Bcrypt to protect those passwords, when you know what the values are, they're very easy to crack. And of course, when they say compromise, they then go on and say, for example, the list may include, but is not limited to, passwords obtained from previous breach corpuses. In other words, if there have been data breaches and passwords have appeared in those data breaches, you shouldn't be using those passwords anymore. This is really interesting. I am going to come back and talk more about that next week, because I am working on something, which I've got to get back to as soon as I finish this, which is going to make this much easier. And I'm really excited about this. It's something I've had in mind for quite a while now, and it's just taken a while to figure out how to do it in the right way, and also how to do it without breaking my bank, for reasons that will become apparent when I release this next week and when I do my weekly update Friday next week. So I think that that stuff is really interesting. I like the fact that there is sort of a modern take on the way we do passwords. I like the fact that it goes against a lot of conventional wisdom. And if I'm entirely honest, I kind of like seeing some companies squirm as they try and explain why they're doing something, not because it makes sense, but just because they've always done it that way. And that really, really changes the way we look at security. Okay, so that I think is pretty cool. Now, there was one individual. I'm doing a lot of this lately. There was one individual who popped up in the discussion who was very, very sure that we are all idiots. And there's not really a nicer way to put that. I suspect, actually, I've heard from this individual in the past. I recall an email discussion maybe 6-9 months ago, something like that. And the I guess the rationale is that there is a school of thought which is that passwords are just irretrievably bad. Insofar as the model of having this like memorable secret, and of course if you have a password manager, part of that problem goes away. But the premise of having these sort of strings and you enter them and you authenticate and that's it, is fundamentally broken, and there is simply no... Just going to leave those monitors off. There is simply no way that we can redeem ourselves. And over many years, many people have come up with many different solutions for how we solve this. And some of them involve QR codes, some of them involve SMSs, some of them involve physical devices, and none of them have really been that successful. And this is sort of the heart of the matter. Every time someone comes up with a solution, they say, this is going to kill passwords. This is absolutely going to kill them. You don't see this stuff getting traction. You know, maybe something like a YubiKey is about the most traction you'd get, and that's used by a tiny fraction of 1% of people and a tiny fraction of 1% of websites. And normally for very sort of high value, high risk sort of stuff. But your everyday mainstream websites simply don't do anything other than passwords, unless they do some things on top of that as well. So for example, I can use biometrics to log on to a mobile device. I know that's not a website, but you get the idea. So we still have all of these underlying passwords, but then we have other authentication mechanisms on top. The reason for this is that passwords are so universally understood. We know they're crap for all sorts of reasons, but everyone knows how to use them. So when someone's designing a site and they're talking to the marketing manager and they're going, hey, there's this new thing where all you do is you download an app and you scan your QR code and you get the value and you put it in the thing. Marketing manager's going to go, you're dreaming. Like, there's no way we're going to do this because this is friction to entry. Now, getting back to this individual, this person was, to be honest, quite irate and quite rude in the way they expressed this as well. And again, you can sort of go through and read the comments. I think their handle was a non-coward or something like that. They were convinced that this was the one true way of doing things. But this was one of these weird things where it was clearly a marketing pitch and other people called this individual on it being a marketing pitch. But then the individual wouldn't actually say what the service was, what the product was, wouldn't identify themselves, and just kept ranting and ranting and ranting. And I know last week I said it's really rare for me to actually block someone from commenting, like I do it once every 3 or 4 months. I did it again because it got to the point where there is someone being obnoxious, dominating the conversation, and not wanting to back up anything they were saying. So it's like, mate, that's enough. You're out. Let's keep the people in here who actually want to have a constructive discussion. But I did sort of want to touch not so much on booting the guy out because that was last week's discussion, but more on the fact that all of these grand ideas about how we're going to kill passwords have to consider the human factor. And if you can't make it easy for people to the point where they don't even have to think about it, you're going to have a lot of trouble getting traction on this. Because people building websites are trying to remove every possible barrier to entry. I mean, for God's sake, we're talking about things like, let's have a character, or let's have a minimum character limit of 6 rather than 8 characters for the password, because just those 2 characters are important enough for us to reduce the complexity of our passwords, because we might just get that many more people. And then someone says, let's just go and do things completely differently in a way that nobody actually understands, or at least nobody is familiar with. You can see the problem. All right, so last thing, sponsorship-wise, I've got Raygun back there again today. I had Raygun last week, and I mentioned that I do use them on Have I Been Pwned, so all of my unhandled exceptions, which is usually stuff like, look, there's been a timeout somewhere, or someone is screwing with my anti-forgery tokens and they're not validating properly, things like that. Very occasionally, I screw something up as well. I do definitely screw things up, and I push it out. And Raygun logs all that, and then I go into the screen here and it tells me exactly what I've done. And I can go and fix it, triage my problems. And I can also get a really good sense of how many people have been impacted by it. So I really like using that service. I'm really glad those guys are continuing to sponsor my blog. So big thanks to them. Go and check Raygun out. And that is it for this week. So hopefully when I speak to you next week, I would have put all of the Ubiquity stuff inside my mate's restaurant. And I'll be able to talk to you about the course a little bit more. And a week after that, I should hopefully be saying it's actually done. And then that'll take us into August. And August is NDC time. So if you're in Australia, NDC Sydney starts on, I think, about the 15th of August. And then it's snowboard time for me, which is a very important time. So that's all for this week. Thank you very much for watching. And I hope you found that interesting.